Well, we're going to be shorthanded on the duty roster so far this morning. I don't think either the Bible reader or the person scheduled for the prayer will be here. The Bible reading is 1 Chronicles chapter 28, verses 9 through 12. 1 Chronicles 28, 9 through 12. As for you, my son Solomon, know the God of your father, and serve him with a whole heart and a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and understands every intent of the thoughts. If you seek him, he will let you find him. But if you forsake him, he will reject you forever. Consider now, the Lord has chosen you to build a house for the sanctuary. Be courageous and act. Then David gave to his son Solomon the plans of the porch of the temple, its buildings, its storehouses, its upper rooms, its inner rooms, and the room for the mercy seat, and the plan of all that he had in mind for the courts of the house of the Lord, and for all the surrounding rooms, for the storehouses of the house of God, and for the storehouses of the dedicated things. So this morning, as we continue in our study of the temple, we're going to focus on the actual construction of the original temple. And as we see from this Bible reading, David actually did the planning and charged Solomon that he was the one that was God had appointed to build it. So all we're going to do this morning is try to highlight some of the features of the building of the temple, and maybe address a couple questions that arise about that. And so in this lesson, we're not going to really be reading a lot of scripture. If you want all of the detail of the scripture, it's recorded twice in the Old Testament, 1 Kings chapters 6 and 7, 2 Chronicles chapters 2 through 4 are where almost all of this information comes from. In the last lesson, we talked about the project of building the temple in terms of some of the building materials, their sources, the cost of obtaining them, the labor, and all of that. And so, actually, we're going to focus on the actual construction project this morning. And that construction project began in the second month of the fourth year of Solomon's reign as king. And according to 1 Kings 6:38, it is completed in the eighth month of the 11th year. So almost 7.5 years is spent in the building of the temple. We do not think that included any of the advanced preparation that David arranged with Hiram, the cutting of the wood, the beginning of the stones. We think that this is from the time the materials were first brought to Jerusalem, and the construction work on the temple site began, is this 7.5 year period. Now, this is one of the basic diagrams. You can find many different ones on the internet of Solomon's temple. The dimension of the buildings given in 1 Kings 6 and verse 2, it's given in cubits, and the problem with that is that the cubit wasn't the same in every country. Generally, it's defined as the tip of, from a normal man's, a grown man's, tip of his middle finger to his elbow. But it depends on which man you're using, that type of thing. And yet, it's believed that in most countries, they had a standard cubit, just like if you go to Washington, D.C., there's a place there that has a standard for a foot and for a yard and for various weights and things like that. Trying to convert them into English and to feet, it was approximately 90 foot by 30 foot and then a height of 45 foot, three stories of 45. Although the interior of the tabernacle, which is the inner line, basically was open from floor to ceiling. So it was not in stories. The stories were around the outside. There'll be a picture here in just a minute that shows that a little bit better. And then there was a porch that ran, I forget where the thing is on this, the laser, but anyhow, the porch where it says the court, Jacob and Boaz, that was a porch on the front of the, what we would call the holiest of holies. The King James Bible calls it the nave of the temple. And that porch was 15 foot wide and ran across the whole length or width of the temple. Inside the building was divided into two compartments. The holiest of holies measured 30 foot by 30 foot by 30 foot. It was a perfect cube. In most pictures, and you'll see this in a picture that's coming here in just a minute, most people account for that, since the interior height would be about 45 foot, is that there were probably steps from the nave or the holy place up to the most holy place, so that it was elevated above the ground floor of the holy place, and that's what created the perfect cube. So the most the holy place, or the nave, would have been 60 by 30 by 45. Those measurements are found in 1 Kings chapter 6, verses 17 through 20. And so as we look at this, there are some major construction details that are given in the text. 1 Kings 6 and verse 7 says, "This house, while it was built of stone, prepared at the quarry, and there was neither hammer nor axe nor any iron tool heard in the house while it was being built." And so the stones of the temple, and you're talking about stones that could have been 4 to 6 foot high and anywhere from 6 to 8 foot long of granite. They were carved out of the mountains. And if you think of this, that Jerusalem is on a mountain, on several mountains. And so they would have been hauled through the mountains and up to the building site without any of the modern power conveniences we have. I mean, it's one of those things people think about it when they think about the Great Pyramids of Egypt, how they got those stones to the top of those pyramids. Same thing with Solomon's Temple. How'd they get those stones from the quarry all the way to the temple? Great engineering feat. And the thing about it was, everything was done at the quarry so that, as it says here in 1 Kings 6 and verse 7, it just fit together as it was being assembled. Now, the thing about that and the question about that is that we're also told in 2 Chronicles 3 and verse 9 that there were nails made for the temple construction. And all of the interior work inside of the granite stones was done in wood. And so the question, it's immaterial in one sense because the temple's been destroyed and we're not there and all that, is whether this statement about no tools only applied to the stonework, or whether that interior woodwork was all assembled, maybe all nailed together somewhere else and brought in the way they do with modern construction, with trusses and things like that, and put into place. So the scholars will argue whether this thing of saying there was no sound of tools at the site only applied to the stone, or whether it also applied to the carpentry that had to go on with the finished work. And so once that exterior stonework was done and the interior work, the walls were all overlaid with cedar plank, and the floor with cypress plank. We learn that in 1 Kings 6, verse 15. But then all the wooden surfaces were overlaid with gold. And so the most holy place, the sanctuary, the main function of that was to house the Ark of the Covenant. 1 Chronicles 28:2 says, "David rose to his feet and said, 'Listen to me, my brethren and my people. I have intended to build a permanent home for the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and for the footstool of our God, so I have made preparation to build it.'" So when David said that we need to build this temple, his express purpose is we need to have a permanent place to house the Ark of the Covenant. So in the most holy place, that's where the Ark of the Covenant was going to be. And against the back wall, probably not attached to it. These are probably freestanding carved object statues. Were two carved cherubs. They were carved of olive wood and overlaid with gold. And they were designed so that from their wings, each wing, there was a wing touching the exterior wall or interior wall on both sides, and stretched to touch each other in the center. So from wall to wall, the cherub's wings were outstretched, and the Ark of the Covenant was put right there between these cherubs. So this picture maybe is a cutaway view and is designed to give us more of an idea of what it was like. The walls of the entire sanctuary, the wooden part of the walls, were all engraved with carved cherubim, palm trees, and flowers. And all of that was overlaid in gold, it tells us in 1 Kings 6 and verse 29. And then there was a woven veil which separated the most holy place from the holy place. We're told that in 2 Chronicles 4 and verse 14. This picture does not show the veil because it's designed to show, it's very hard to see if you look at that, the cherubs against the back wall. But you notice the steps leading up to it, there would have been a veil so that some priest serving in the nave would not automatically see into the holiest holies, that was sealed off to everybody once it was dedicated, except the high priest. The interior doors and thresholds were made of olive and cedar wood and were overlaid with gold. And in addition to that, 2 Chronicles, chapter 3 and verse 6, says that in addition to all the gold overlay, the entire interior featured insets of very precious stones. So there would have been diamonds and sapphires and all the various precious stones of that time inset into the gold inlay. So it would have been a very elaborate, very large piece of jewelry in terms of the room. And so that's the interior of the temple and how glorious that it would be. This is an artist's rendition of what the outside would have looked like, but it is one artist's idea. If we go and look up Solomon's temple on the internet, you probably get four or five different artistic interpretations of what it might look like. The basic reason that I wanted to show this is it shows the labor for the washing of the priests, and also the altar, which had many steps leading up to it, and shows the basins that were scattered around for other washing that often happened in connection with the worship, the temple worship. A lot of the bronze metallic work that you see, and probably all the gold inlay, was done by Hiram. And essentially, one of the confusing things about the story is that there are two Hirams. And you have to understand that Hebrew was written without vowels. It's a consonantal language. And so the same set of vowels or consonants, if they have different vowels, it's pronounced different ways. And they just, I guess, instinctively did that as they learned their language. And so this is the case. There is Hiram, the king of Tyre, and he's the one that David and later Solomon contracts with to provide all the Lebanon, all the woods of Lebanon, and so forth. But then in 2 Chronicles chapter 7 or 2, verses 13 and 14, we're told that David asked him for help in the skilled work, and that he sends another man whose name is Huram Abi. And actually, all Abi means is son of. And so Huram and Hiram have the same three consonants. And so depending upon the translation of the Bible, the publisher that you're using and the translation, sometimes they render both these names Hiram. Some do both Huram. Some do the king as Hiram, the craftsman as Huram, but they are two different people. And Huram is the one that is skilled to do all of this work. And so in 2 Chronicles chapter 2, verses 13 and 14, we learn all of the bronze work that had to go on in the temple. The lampstands were all cast bronze. The tables, the doors were covered and overlaid with bronze. The exterior bronze work is pictured on this particular picture. The bronze sea had a capacity of 2,000 baths. And it's kind of like the cubit, exactly what was a bath. But it's estimated that would hold, in today's measurements, about 5,800 gallons of water. And so what is that? Well, it's bigger probably than a baptistry. I looked it up, and the average backyard swimming pool holds between 18,000 and 20,000 gallons of water. And so this would be about one-fourth the size of the normal 30 by 40 backyard swimming pool. So a little bit bigger, a lot bigger than a bathtub, it was the bronze oxen were designed. There are 12 of them representing the 12 tribes. Their tails are together. That forms the cradle upon which this big bronze bowl actually sits. And the altar, stone, but the altar itself was of bronze. And it could be elevated. And one of the reasons we mention that is the two bronze pillars that are in the front, they're actually named. And this is one of the interesting stories, because those who don't believe in the Bible will cite this as one of the contradictions in the Bible, because the height is given in 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles. And if you include the pillar and the capitals that sat on top of it, then they would be about 35 foot high and 6 foot thick. Zechariah mentions the two pillars, and he gives a different height for them. And so skeptics will say, well, here the Bible is contradicting itself. Which height were they? And the logical explanation is that both of the men were right, because it would depend upon how you measured it. And the example that's actually given there is that if you took a modern church building and asked several different men what the height of the church building would be, that some would look like here at our building on the ground floor and measure up to there and say it's that high. Others, from their perspective, would go out in the parking lot and where the foundation is, and go up and say, well, it's that high. And a third person, not our building, but in a modern church building, if they included the steeple, would come up with 20 foot more than any of the other two, and yet all three of them would be right based upon their perspective. And so one of the laws of apologetics is there's only a contradiction if there is not a logical alternate explanation. And so the obvious explanation is Solomon, the Kings and Chronicles, are concerned with the construction of these pillars. And so, if you notice in this picture, the pillars are sitting raised up from the base of the temple itself. And so that would be the account of it. One of the other things that's important about these pillars, if you notice them, is they have no structural purpose whatsoever. They are not supporting the temple. They are designed to be spectacularly decorative, and that's what they were. Now, in addition to the those two pillars, the bronze sea and the bronze altar. 2 Chronicles 4 and verse 6 talks about all the wash basins. And 2 Chronicles 4:11 about all the innumerable smaller objects, all made of bronze, which you would assume would be the work of this firm, Hobby. And then finally, when you go to 2 Chronicles chapter 4 and verse 19, what the interesting thing is you find out that Solomon is credited with all this work. It says, Solomon also made all the things worth in the house of God, even the golden altar, the tables with the bread of the presence on them, the lampstands, their lamps of pure gold to burn in front of the inner sanctuary in the way prescribed, the flowers, the lamps, the tongs of gold, of purest gold, the snuffers, the bowls, the spoons, the fireplace of gold, and the entrance of the house and its inner doors, the holiest of holies, the door of the house, all of that nave of gold. It says Solomon made it. And yet Hiram was the craftsman. And so this is historically called Solomon's Temple. So the real explanation of that is Solomon's the king, and he's the one that controlled this whole project and financed it. And so it's in that sense that it said that he did all this. He authorized it all. He paid for it all with the taxes of the country. So these are the highlights. And as we mentioned, if you want to read all of the detail in it, it's a lot of detail. Then those chapters in 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles provide a very detailed description. So next Sunday morning, we're going to look at the dedication of this temple and all that went on with that. And we're going to have to do with that what we did with this. There's way too many chapters involved. So we'll do an overview, and I'll give you the identity of where to look for if you're looking at interested in a more detail. Yes, sir. Yes, it's in the outer court.
Okay, so the Gentiles could actually...
Oh, no. It's in the courtyard around the temple, but like in the temple of Jesus' day, the court of women and the court of Gentiles was farther out than that.
The Gentiles couldn't observe.
No.
Okay.
No. And with the built up like that and so forth, an average Jewish man who was in the courtyard could not see into the sanctuary, only the priests. Could get in there, and only the high priest, once the veil was put in place, could get into the holiest of holies. Okay, Brother Rose is on the schedule for the prayer, so I'll say that prayer, and then we'll go on to our Bible.